Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. And our top story today, sticker prices increasingly fail to capture true college costs. And joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Professor Philip Levine is from the Department of Economics at Wellesley College. Professor Levine, it is so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
And we're going to be talking about the price of college, and most importantly, the sticker price, maybe not always reflecting all college costs. Let's just start with some of the basics. How do we determine the actual cost of university?
Well, the thing that's most easily known is this thing called the sticker price. The sticker price is what gets promoted. You read the newspaper, it says, you know, college costs $8,000 or some, you know, very large amount of money. And everyone kind of knows those numbers. The problem is that's not really what most people are going to end up paying for college. If you're a very high income family and you attend a handful of highly selective institutions, those students tend to pay that much money. Everyone else is paying less. And the problem I think that we really face in terms of college pricing is that, like, how much less you have to pay is not easy to figure out.
So it becomes a very challenge. So if you're a moderate income family, let's start there. It could often be you're not going to pay the sticker price. You're not going to pay X number of dollars. There are grants, financial aid programs, maybe academic or sports scholarships that actually will help reduce that number down. So it's really individualized.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's two main forms of financial aid: the athletic scholarships, if you're 6 feet eight inches tall and have a great jump shot, you can get one of those. Those are hard to come by.
Not me, professor.
Sure. So, you know, really for most people, the two main forms of financial aid are either need-based or merit-based. Need-based financial aid is really just a function of your income and assets. So when you fill out the FAFSA, if you were able to do it this year, because there were considerable issues with that this year. But in general, if you're filling out the FAFSA, the whole point of the FAFSA is to record a lot of detail about your income and assets. And then behind the scenes, there is this fancy formula that calculates an amount that indicates how much you can afford to pay, quote unquote. And that's, you know, I'm putting quotes around that on purpose because obviously there's no right answer to that question. It's giving some indication of how much you can afford to pay.
Right, because I'm sorry. I was just going to follow up just real quick, and I'm sorry to cut you off. But that affordability could vary. Let's say you have a mortgage payment. Now, some of that probably would be disclosed in the financial aid, but I'm just thinking about some of the other familial expenses that probably go in there. Having a car, if you have a lease or a car payment, right? All those things have to get factored in and could vary family to family.
So in some sense, if you think about it, what happens when you're filling out a financial aid form is you're doing the equivalent of doing your taxes twice. You have to do your taxes and the first time for your income. And if you think about how much fun it is filling out the 1040 form, you're not doing anything that's really a lot different. As a matter of fact, in the new world, if FAFSA simplification actually worked well, what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to click on a button and all the IRS information that you've already filled in is supposed to get dumped automatically into the FAFSA form. So you're doing taxes on the basis of your income, and then you're doing taxes on the basis of your assets, because you don't pay, if you have an account at Vanguard, income tax system doesn't really tax the balance, but the financial aid system does. So income and assets, you do a tax form, the equivalent of a tax form for income, the equivalent of a tax form for assets. It goes into the computer does its magic and it spits out a number, which in the new world is called the student aid index. It used to be called the expected family contribution. That's the result of that process. That's how need-based aid is determined as a result of that number. It sort of gives an indication of, like, roughly speaking, how much you can afford to pay. And then the college is going to have this amount that they sort of want you to pay. And the two things don't necessarily match, but they take it into consideration. So if you make $50,000 a year and you have no assets, they can't really expect you to pay a whole lot. The calculation would come out and say you can't really afford to pay a whole lot. The college will charge you less. They probably won't be charging you zero, which really is, roughly speaking, what you can afford. But they will charge you less. That's need-based financial.
Well,
Merit-based
Professor,
financial. Go ahead.
no, go ahead, finish. I interrupted you.
So merit-based financial aid is different. Merit-based, if you put, so in the old world, when tests were required, and many institutions still have tests optional, if you submit your test score, your SATs or ACTs or whatever, and you did well, and then you have high grades in school, in high school, you can get financial aid based on that as well. The interesting thing about those two things is they tend to offset each other. So if you're eligible for some need-based financial aid and you're eligible for some merit-based financial aid, they tend not to give you both. They substitute for each other. So in reality, what happens is the higher income students who get the merit aid get to keep the merit aid, and the lower income students who get the financial aid and the merit aid get, they can label it however they want, but they're only getting one of them.
Well, Professor Levine, I need to take a very quick break. We come back. We're going to talk about what families can do to better understand college costs and actually pay for college. And we'll also talk about what colleges might be able to do better. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses. I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Welcome back. We're joined this morning by Professor Philip Levine of Wellesley College. Professor Levine, thank you so much for staying with us this morning.
No problem.
Yeah, it's a fun conversation. I want to talk about what the family can do in a minute. What can colleges do better? And you talk about the sticker price isn't always what you pay. Are there things that colleges and universities, whether they're private, whether they're public, can do better to kind of explain the costs that the student and their family are going to pay?
Yeah, absolutely. Colleges can do a much better job of communicating actual college costs. So the federal government, the reason why the sticker price is so prominent in public discussions of costs is because the federal government requires institutions to post that number on their website. So if any school in the country, you can find a number called the cost of attendance. It includes every expense you can possibly imagine that's associated with going to that college. Tuition fees, books, room and board, toothpaste, everything. Travel, the subway, tokens, whatever you need. That's got to be factored into this cost of attendance number. That's what they report. So they have to, the, So the institution has to come up with a number like that and report it to the federal government and post it on the website. The fact that very few people actually end up paying that number, that's where the problem comes in. It's be so how much you're actually going to have to pay, unfortunately, is not determined through a simple process. So colleges get very reluctant to be forecasting for you an exact amount. Like, I think given your characteristics, you're going to owe $20,000, not $90,000. That's hard for them to get to the point where they're willing to commit to that. Because there's a lot of uncertainty in the process. They don't really know your financial details early in the process. That's what you fill out the forms, they do other calculations, then they send you this letter that says you really only owe $20,000. If they were more forthcoming in providing estimates as to what that number might be, it would be extremely helpful. Maybe it doesn't really matter in an early stage of the process if it's exactly $20,000. You told someone like, well, we don't really know for sure, but it could be between that's $15,000 and $25,000. Like, ultimately you really want to know what's it going to cost you. But if you can do something to get them off of the $90,000 or the $35,000 that a public institution would charge, because they don't charge sticker prices either to most people, that would be incredibly helpful.
Professor, as you're describing this, I think about the mortgage process. Having not gone through that in a long time, and just thinking about buying a home now, when you buy a home, you get pre-qualified, then they tell you how much house can you afford. And you get this letter that says, this is what this is what you're qualified for. It seemed like to me that that would be something that would be very helpful to a family. Let's talk about the family. Kind of preparing, because if you have a wide dispersion between 90,000 and 20, I'm like thinking, how do you budget for that? Whereas if you're buying a home and you know you got to spend X, you know what kind of home you can buy. Now you just got to, if you want to make up any difference, you got to put a bigger down payment. So what can family members do to mitigate this, what can be a wide dispersion?
I mean, it's interesting you talk about the home market because it's almost like if you think about in the home market, if you didn't really know the price that you were going to have to pay in advance, there'd be lots of neighborhoods you wouldn't even bother going to look at because you just have no idea. And the same is true in college in the sense that, like, if you think every college costs $90,000, well, there's a lot of people who aren't going to those schools. And if it's a lot less than that, you should tell them. So, in terms of what a family can do, there are these in the mortgage market, getting pre-qualified isn't really that hard. I mean, it's not a walk in the park, but you have a mortgage agent, you talk to them, you send them some information, then they can give you an answer back. Colleges have a clunkier version of that. They're called net price calculators. Federal government also requires institutions to implement these net price calculators where you plug in basic financial characteristics. The idea is that you plug in basic financial characteristics and it gives you back a rough estimate of what your college is going to cost you. And if that worked really well, that would solve the problems that I'm talking about. It's just that that system doesn't really work very well. So unfortunately, for a family, the advice that I would still be giving you is that you should be looking for, if you want to go to college X, go to Google and type in College X net price calculator. It'll take you to the tool that they have available for you and go from there. I mean, they tend not to be easy to use. They tend to ask for tax information and things that like makes people skin crawl a little bit. But if you fight your way through it, you will get an estimate. And that's the best you can do right now. So basically, my advice to you is, unfortunately, you have to do the work. But if you do the work, you will get some useful information. And presumably, what you will get out of that is it's unlikely that you will be paying the sticker price.
Lastly, Professor, let's talk about down the road, and you mentioned FAFSA. But is there possibility for reform? I don't know reform, but you mentioned it's a little bit clunky to get some of that information. Do you see it down the line where that that becomes a little more streamlined, a lot easier
That would be
for
great.
professionals.
So,
It sounds like an entrepreneurial opportunity for somebody, candidly, to get all
well,
those. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
I will just tell you that, so the entrepreneurial opportunity is not in the for-profit sense, but I run a nonprofit organization called myintuition.org. You can Google that. So my whole point was that we should find a way to make this simpler. And if you go to my website for several dozen institutions, you can get a very simple estimate. Takes under 3 minutes, 90% completion rate. It works very well. We get very positive feedback. That works a lot. The whole point of starting my nonprofit was to make this process simpler for people. There's hundreds of colleges in the United States. I have several dozen. It's useful for, so if you go to my website, it'll be helpful for you if the school that you're interested in happens to be there. If not, you have to go to the school's webpage. There have been proposals. In some sense, the legislation that mandated these net price calculators was very well intentioned. It had exactly the right idea, but the proof is in the pudding, and it wasn't really implemented very well.
Yeah.
You can imagine revised legislation that sort of does a better job of mandating. Like, it would be nice if it were universal. It would be nice if all the forms looked the same. It would be nice that if you knew, depend regardless of the school, what are the handful of elements that you have to enter, not the 20 or 30. If you're doing a whole tax form to get the estimate, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. It should be simple, it should be accessible, and it should be uniform. There's no reason why legislation couldn't incorporate that. But it requires a law, and getting a law passed ever, and particularly these days, is not the easiest thing in the world.
No, it's certainly not. But it seems like this would be in the best interest of the college and university, as it would be in the best interest of a family. And so hopefully, if we get through this legislative session, because I know it's an election year, always tough to pass legislation in an election year. It's tough in general, but definitely during an election year. Hopefully, this is something because it really is all over the place. Professor Levine, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Great. I'm glad I could have this conversation.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more, and all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Well, then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving. And don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.